Chapter 12. Could I have stopped all this? If I'd told Calomus right at the start to let Corellia go its own way, would we be here now? Trying to force every Alliance world to pool its defense forces was a principle. We didn't actually have an external threat to face, but we created one. And if another enemy like the Yuuzhan Vong had ever shown up, I'm certain that Corellians would have come running to defend the galaxy anyway, like they always have. Luke Skywalker to Han Solo. 50 kilometers outside Fleet Assembly Area, near Fondor. Kytus fumed. He was no fool. He wasn't mad, and he had explored more arcane force techniques than any member of the Jedi Council. He did not fall prey to tricks. But even if that phantom fleet had been a trick, and not some freak phenomenon thrown up by physics beyond his grasp, then who was creating it? He took one long loop around the area in the Stealth X. Kytus wasn't checking to make sure he hadn't missed any more humiliatingly non-existent ships. He was scouting for the source of the illusion, and it was an illusion. Yes, that was much, much more likely than the laws of the universe having a bad day. He'd pulled off some remarkably convincing tricks himself. He'd hidden Lumia right under Luke's nose. Literally. He'd also been caught up in manufactured illusions, and he could still feel the apparent reality of Lumia's conjured world in her asteroid habitat. Neothel, mundane rule follower that she was, had simply tested reality by firing a torpedo, her mind unencumbered by any Hall of Mirrors thinking that would make her question if the torpedo failing to hit anything was also part of the same elaborate, convincing construction. "But I'm a Sith Lord. I should be beyond this. I should be anticipating these strikes against me." It had to be one of the renegade Jedi. Lumia was dead. Who else might be able to fool him? Ben? No. Ben had his skills, like vanishing in the Force, but he thought in honest, plain lines, channeling his Force power into extensions of ordinary talents like smashing down doors, locating explosives, and blinding surveillance holocams. Two burly CSF officers and a sniffer ack could do that. So it would be one of the usual suspects. Luke, probably, or maybe Zek, because it wasn't his mother's or his sister's style. Where were they? How far could Luke extend his powers? And why couldn't anyone else see it? Illusions could be made visible to many people, so it was designed to disturb him and him alone, not to lure his ships into shooting, and whatever might result from that. Kytus could feel nothing beyond a distant sense that there were still Jedi in the Force, much the way the lights of a city were a constant and unnoticed backdrop until they went out. He was chasing phantoms again. That was what they wanted. He had to focus, swallow his anger, and avoid being provoked. The crew of the Anakin Solo had already heard him make a complete fool of himself. He'd have to work on restoring his infallible image. Luke. After Neothel, before order being restored, he had to do something about Luke. Perhaps Luke would have the common sense of the last remaining Jedi after Palpatine's purge and go into exile. Ahead of Kytus, an auxiliary vessel was hooking up to a cruiser to replenish supplies via a long tube-like tunnel, proof of how rapidly some of the Third Fleet had slipped their berths. They were catching up on routine tasks that would have normally been completed alongside. The Imperials would have brought forward their embarkation, too. As soon as they showed up, they could get this over with. Occupying Fondor wasn't an option. No. It would turn into Corellia, but worse. Worlds looked at Corellia, bruised but still Confederate, and might even be emboldened enough by the cocky defiance to try to emulate it. Fondor might do that while tying up hundreds of thousands of troops and their vessels. Kytus intended to make an example of Fondor, the sort that said, "Don't try this again." Torching Kashyyyk should have announced that, but the human majority on many planets probably took more notice of what happened to their own related species in nice clean cities. He was among the scattered ships now, the light level in his cockpit, the light from the distant sun at his back dipped slightly. He couldn't see anything on his instruments. He couldn't feel anything near him beyond the general oppressive weight of warships preparing for battle. "Remember what happened last time." Kytus wouldn't be caught twice. If he leaned slightly to one side, the reflection at his six often appeared on the viewscreen in front of him. He shifted in his seat, but there was nothing. "If I jump at every shadow now, he's got me. Ludicrous." The next moment, the shrink of tearing fibroplast vibrated through the airframe and his chest, and he was flung to port, spinning out of control. Something had hit him. He hadn't clipped anything through careless flying. He was too experienced, too good. He punched the Stealth X into a short burn to stop the roll and peeled away under the ships to put some distance between him and whatever had rammed him. Obviously, he couldn't see it. No point sending a distress signal. This wasn't something to share with the fleet again. He accelerated, trying to get some edge, looking for what wasn't there. Stars. He was straining to find a dark area of obscured stars, the only way he could spot a fighter that was as camouflaged and undetectable as his own. "I've been hunted by a Stealth X before, Luke. You think I'm stupid?" If he couldn't see Luke, he would maneuver where Luke couldn't detect him. He wasn't going to get in the same position of not being able to use his cannon as he had with Mara. He'd risk being hit by fragments. He didn't have far to run for help if he got a slow decompression. This time, he'd use what he'd learned. For the first time, though, he began to wonder if it was Luke out there. "Ben?" Kytus hadn't felt anyone. Luke, he could always sense Luke. But Ben had taken to force hiding instantly. Mara had managed it for critical moments and nearly killed him. But this smacked of Ben. Bang! Something clipped him from underneath the fuselage this time, shaking his teeth. He corrected course. He didn't need instruments to tell him he had a breach somewhere. When he looped again, he caught sight of a thin trail of escaping vapor or fluid, probably coolant. Stealth X's had traded shielding for sensor negation. They still had pretty tough skins in collisions, but hitting another vessel at these speeds normally tore off parts and ended unhappily. This was incredibly precise wingtip ramming, or staggering luck twice in a row, and he was no longer undetectable. He had a vapor trail. He opened a comm channel. There was no point trying for a meld, after all. The Stealth X's comm system had seen more use today than it had in its entire service history.
"Face me, and let's finish it," he said. "Ben or Luke? If it's Luke, then he's got new tricks. It could even be Jaina, if Ben's teaching everyone to shut down in the Force. I don't care."
"Come about and head for the orbitals," said Luke's voice. "You'll make it. Then land, and we'll talk." Kytus headed for the Anakin, wondering just how far Luke would go to force him to land. The odds were different now. This wasn't like Cavan. Kytus had a fleet right next door.
"Aren't you going to open fire?"
There was a flash of blackness in the cockpit as the pursuing vessel blocked the sun for a moment. Luke's presence faded back into the Force like a sunrise. "If I wanted to kill you, I could have done it several times over by now."
You think a stern talking to, deep programming, and the love of a good family will put me right again?
I'm prepared to try. You'd be amazed. Kytus was drawing Luke deeper into the fleet assembly area. Luke seemed to be simply hanging a wing breadth off his tail, a suicidal tactic for anyone else.
You're going to have to shoot me down to stop me, said Kytus.
I always learn from history.
Try.
Kytus struggled to correct the Stealth X as the damaged starboard wing cannon broke away. The escaping vapor was speckled with round droplets now.
Did you do that?
Chunk! The port cannon ripped free. You could retaliate, said Luke, and we'll both end up dead. Come about and head back toward Fondor. Kytus was coming up on the fleet auxiliaries with their replenishment conduits strung between ships. If he could alert his anti-air batteries on the frigates, he could lead Luke's Stealth X between them and trust to the gunner's timing.
I'm not your father, Luke, and I don't need to be redeemed, said Kytus.
Luke reacted. It stung him, and Kytus actually hadn't meant it to. He felt the flinch. Mara told me that about Lumia. The name made Kytus flinch this time.
She was right, Luke.
Pinpoints of light picked out maintenance pods moving over ship's hulls. Kytus was preparing for a feint and a dash into the Anakin's hangar bay now. Luke was too smart to mess around in the heart of the GA fleet. Neothel must have done a deal. Kytus was being herded toward something here. He was being set up. Luke hadn't mentioned Mara's death. Odd, he either had something worse planned for Kytus, or he didn't think he was responsible. The axe waiting to fall kept getting bigger. Fett hadn't come after him either, and if one thing was certain, it was that he would find a way of getting at him. But not this time. Luke's Stealth X nudged him again from behind. How? Kytus couldn't see. Force push? Something metallic inside the fuselage shrieked. He had a sense of someone rummaging furiously in the drives as if looking for a dropped Hydra spanner, throwing fragments into the coils.
He's ripping the thing apart.
Kytus tried to block Luke in the force and suddenly got an idea of just how much power Luke could muster. His seat shot forward, sheared off the runners, tipped to one side, and he hit the console at an angle before he could buffer the collision with the force. Something cracked in his chest. Pain flared, stopped his breathing. Then he was aware of brilliant white light coming right at him. In the moments before he managed to veer off to starboard, almost blinded, he got a glimpse of a Stealth X's uneven outline with two grappling arms extended, and the sense of a Jedi other than Luke. They'd tried to cripple the Stealth X and grab him, airframe and all, right in the middle of the fleet. Brazen. Incredible. He'd never allow anyone but his own apprentice to fly a Stealth X again, not even an ordinary pilot. Luke was still close behind, feeling as if he were actually leaning on his shoulder. Kytus switched to raw instinct. He looped around, weaving between cruisers spaced at regular intervals. Someone must have picked him up on visual by now, surely, and then maneuvered to line up the auxiliaries with the Anakin Solo, accelerating. He'd either hit it right, or he'd crash. But if the other Stealth X tried to take him at this velocity from a head-on intercept, it'd rip them both apart. Kytus aimed right at the fleet auxiliary replenishing a landing craft. It was crewed by civilians, merchant fleet, non-combatants. It had only a light cannon for self-defense. The long connection tunnel was actually an airlock extender, a quick and easy way to transfer supplies without docking shuttles, and there'd be crew working in it. Luke was right on his tail. Smashing through it would damage the Stealth X badly, but it would rip the tunnel apart, and there'd be deaths.
Let's see who blinks first.
Kytus realized nobody could see any of the stealth X's. Whatever fluid he was losing had vented completely. The auxiliaries couldn't even pick them up on collision alarms.
Do it.
The Anakin Solo loomed behind it. Don't! Luke could see what he was doing all right.
I'm past caring, said Kytus,
lying.
You'll peel off rather than risk clipping that. Killing workers.
Kytus thought.
I'll live with it.
The orange tunnel rushed up to meet him faster than he expected, and he jerked the yoke back. Nothing snagged him. He didn't feel it, anyway. He couldn't look back, but he felt Luke's moment of horror at a near hit, buying him seconds that he needed to shoot underneath the Star Destroyer and come back along its length toward one of the hangar decks.
Anakin Solo, emergency landing. Damaged Stealth X-1-1. Open 5 Alpha hangar.
He could have sworn he snapped off the tip of a commast. He was holding the fighter steady as much by the force as by its controls, and trying to slow it with the force as well, because the braking burn wasn't enough. He had to drop into that slot just right, or he'd take the section out with him.
I could have activated the transponder, let them track me for the last few seconds, but I can't pinpoint the Jedi. Too late.
Kytus stopped thinking and felt. He was braking with everything he had. Coming out of the blackness of space, the hangar lights were sudden and blinding. And then he realized they were sparks. He was skidding across the hangar deck. The bulkhead filled his view. The arrestor baffle caught him. He was flung against what felt like a permacrete wall. As the lights around dimmed, and he couldn't see through the canopy any longer, he had a foolish moment of thinking he was dying.
No, you've done that. Doesn't feel like this.
It was the automatic flame-retardant foam coating the fighter. The airframe was completely still. He wasn't lodged in a bulkhead. He inhaled sharply, cursed a broken rib, and set about trying to heal it, eyes closed, while he waited for the fire party to decide he wasn't going to explode and crack the canopy from the outside. After a few moments, the light level increased. The foam was dispersing, and the canopy opened.
Sir, I hope your insurance covers this.
Say the right thing. The Jason Solo thing. Show them you're not a madman. I swerved to avoid a Jedi,
Kytus said.
I didn't get his number. Give me a hand, will you?
They were expecting him to rage at them for some imagined shortcoming, he could tell. He felt their relief as he climbed out of the cockpit and slipped on the remains of the foam. When he looked back, the Stealth X was a mess. He was quite upset by that.
Quick coat of paint, sir, and you'll never know she had a prang,
the crash crew chief said.
Med droid's on the way.
At least I know who generated the Phantom Fleet,
Kytus said. This counter-rumor could zip around the fleet, too.
Sane, humble, even humorous in adversity. Next time I try to chase Luke Skywalker's pranks, confiscate my pass card, will you?
They laughed. Good old Colonel Solo, one of the team. Not the one who killed junior officers at all. He controlled himself sufficiently to limp back to his day cabin via the bridge, where he found that the Jedi illusion story had preceded him, and closed the hatch before letting the pent-up rage escape like steam. He looked in the mirror. A few cuts, and the eyes of a stranger, yellow. But eyes he was getting used to. He could channel anger now. He would save its focus and momentum to take out Fondor. GA Warship Ocean, Fleet Assembly Area, off Fondor. Neothel listened to the chatter on the bridge, calf in hand. He said the Jedi created a force illusion of a huge fleet, targeted solely at him, one of the signals officers said.
Oh, Jedi, of course.
The junior officer of the watch was glued to the sensor screen, but still managed to roll his eyes in mock realization.
Don't you just hate it when that happens?
Neafel believed it, but she was still waiting to hear it from Jason's own lips. The absence of the Fondorian fleet was troubling her. The first wave of the Imperial Remnant had dropped out of hyperspace, and she was waiting for a comm from Pelion. She had made up her mind. She would seek a surrender, and if Fondor declined talks, she would disable the defenses on the orbitals to allow the ground troops to land and secure them, one at a time, and then move on to begin precision attacks on the planet's fleet bases. There was no point creating a wasteland. And if, when, the Fondorian fleet reappeared, they'd have to get past Pelion, too. And then there was Jason Solo. Luke would have to learn to shoot to kill. He really would. She wondered if she would have fired if she'd had a lock on Jason. She imagined her fingers curled around the yoke of an X-wing, and her thumb depressing the button, and wasn't sure that she would.
But what do you do with a Sith? What do you do to restrain a man who has powers like Luke Skywalker, but no rules, no moral limits?
It was hard to see him as simply someone who believed in benign dictatorship, but whose law and order policy sometimes got out of hand. His otherness disturbed her. She could barely remember Palpatine's reign, just his image everywhere, and Vader at parades on the Holonews. Occasionally. But she hadn't known they were Sith. She didn't even know then that Jedi existed. When she studied history at school, she learned about the Sith-Jedi Wars by rote, but now that she could actually put it in a personal context of individuals she worked with, it had taken on a whole new meaning. She was a little alarmed by both sides. The mind influence was the most corrosive realization she'd had. How much of what she'd done was purely of her own volition? Luke could even deceive Jason into fighting a fleet that wasn't there.
No excuses. You knew what that leak to Luke would do. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't examine every urge you get to see if it's really your own.
Ma'am, Admiral Pelion for you.
The signals officer patched through the comm.
Visual, too.
Gil, you missed the warm-up act,
she said. Pelion filled the holoscreen, all immaculately trimmed white mustache and charcoal-gray tunic. She saw the positive reaction of the crew. He exuded reliability.
So I hear, Char. It's all rather quiet down there, isn't it?
I won't say it.
If they have a surprise for us, we might have to find one for them.
Have you had a chance to peruse my new battle plan?
I have, Pelion said. Will it survive contact with Colonel Solo?
Pelion could always lighten the mood if he put his mind to it.
Shall we see if he's recovered sufficiently to meet us?
Neathel asked.
Your flagship or mine? Or even his?
I'll tell him Bloodfin. He wants to keep you happy.
Half an hour. I'm very conscious of the lack of even a Fondorian patrol.
A great deal was said in front of the more junior ranks, and in most cases it wasn't politic to hint at disagreement with other commanders. But Neathel was putting distance between herself and Jason, and she needed them to know it. If Luke had warned her that he was going to attempt a snatch, she might even have been able to help him. But he seemed reluctant to involve her. She wondered when he might next reappear. If he didn't, she would have to go ahead with a hasty plan that had crystallized on the inbound jump. She would relieve Jason of command and order the Anakin back to base. The exact timing would depend on the progress of the operation, but it would be before the withdrawal to Coruscant. With Pelion, she had enough firepower to enforce it if she had to. A third of the ship's commanders in her task force were likely to support her, and few of the others would actively oppose her. It was still a major risk in the middle of a war, but waiting until the war was over wasn't an option. Tahiri Vela now appeared to be the gatekeeper for comms to Jason, at least when he was off the bridge.
"Lieutenant, is Colonel Solo well enough to transfer to Bloodfin for a senior staff session at 2200?
"He's well, Admiral."
Tahiri paused, and the link went quiet as if she was consulting him.
"We'll be there."
We? She'd fallen into a flag lieutenant role then. The more scurrilous members of the crew assumed she was a new romantic interest, but Neothel had watched the dynamics of how Jason behaved with Ben Skywalker, and it was much more a relationship of gang boss and junior henchman. Tahiri would be his fixer, messenger, and possibly even spy. Possibly? Definitely. Jason knew how to lead troops instinctively, but his true calling was political gamesmaster.
"What's the estimate on the Stealth X?"
Neothel asked.
"We're a little short of them until Incom deliver. You might have to slum it with X-Wings."
"Operational in 48 hours. The workshop's remounting cannons now."
"Cannibalizing, no doubt. Are you going to be flying combat?"
"No. I have orders to liaise with the Imperial Remnant."
"Ah, spy. I was right. Later then, Lieutenant."
Neothel would have consulted Jason on contact with the Fondorian president, Shas Vada, but time was short, and that was the excuse she would give him. She kept an eye on the chrono while contact was made with Vada's office, realizing for the first time that being Supreme Commander, as well as Joint Chief of State, was an awkward mix when making diplomatic contact. Being asked to rejoin the GA could never be called exploratory talks, when the request came from the senior commander of a task force on war footing.
"Chief of State," said Vada, "this strikes me as a decision already taken in search of a retroactive justification."
He was right. They were going through the motions.
"President Vada, I can only ask again that you agree to rejoin the Galactic Alliance and contribute to the common defense of the member worlds."
"Having just reached some kind of economic recovery after the Yuuzhan Vong, and as our economy is substantially dependent on shipbuilding and the defense industry, we're under no illusion that we're seen as anything other than another handy fleet resource for the defense of Coruscant."
He was awfully pious for a leader of a world that strip-mined every moon, asteroid, and stray pebble in the Tapani sector.
"I'll give you until 2359 to put the request to your cabinet and respond formally to me."
"I can give you our answer now."
"Nevertheless, I feel obliged to allow you that time."
It was a warning, and sometimes the cold wind blowing from the brink did sober people up. The fleet would begin the attack any time after midnight. There was no advantage of surprise left for either side at this late stage.
"Noted, Chief of State. Remember that we're no use to you, broken."
Maybe there was some room for maneuver. She'd keep an eye on that. Jason Solo, though, was going to be disappointed if he didn't get his chance to show what firm government meant.
"Ma'am," said the comms officer, "there's some HNE mobile broadcast units straying into the area."
"We haven't declared an exclusion zone."
"Shall I issue a warning?"
"Tell them they might well be in crossfire at any time. They take their chances."
"One has already requested an interview with Colonel Solo. Apparently he's given them clearance to accompany the troop landings on the first orbital."
"He'd better win, then," said Neothel, "or he'll be taking prime airtime to advertise how to repeat our failures at Corellia.
And if he did, he'd be doing it on his own. Crew Compartment of Trakad, Ori Ramakade RV Point, somewhere near the Tapani Sector, 2200 hours, awaiting orders from Admiral Dalla.
Will your brother know when you're around?
Mirtagev asked. Jaina almost stopped chewing. It was the first time that Mirta had mentioned Jason, and as she could only want lethal revenge on him for her mother's death, it showed either tact or tactics. Mondo women didn't do tact. Jaina took in another slab of ujalai and used the silence enforced by chewing to gather her thoughts. The cake was like a solid mortar mix made from nuts, syrup, dried fruit, and spices, cloyingly sweet. It was as much exercise as nourishment. She worried that her teeth would collapse long before the rest of her.
"Yes, he probably will," she said,
and he'd be baffled by the impressions he got back, to say the least.
"We're twins. They say that even non-force-sensitive twins are linked across distance somehow. With Jedi, it's real. Except he disguises his force presence, so I'd never know he was around."
Mirta had the same eyes as her grandfather. She looked as if she were permanently assessing the risk of something bad happening, and whether she could shoot it or sell it.
"You could always follow the trail of bodies, I suppose."
It was going to happen sooner or later. What did you say to someone whose mother had died under your brother's interrogation? Sorry didn't quite cut it. Somehow the fact that Aelin Vel had been a bounty hunter and assassin, ostensibly hired to kill the Solo family, didn't give Jaina quite the fuel of righteous indignation that she imagined when she was face to face with the human wreckage scattered by those casual decisions.
"It's okay. Aelin was just going through the motions, using Dad to lure her own father to his death. She wasn't after us, really, and she was hired by Dad's cousin to assassinate us anyway. It's not as if he hadn't tried before. Families, aren't they great? If there was anything I could do to atone for him, I'd do it," said Jaina. "I'll do what I can to stop him doing it again. I'm sorry, by the way, but you know that." "So it's true he killed your Aunt Mara?"
It was freshly shocking each time. Jaina still couldn't see him going that far. But then he'd tortured Ben, thinking he was doing him good. If he did anything, he might not have planned for it to go that badly wrong. Was there a real difference between sick and evil?
"I don't know, Mirta." "Think he's capable of it?" "I don't know him anymore. I don't even know where to start."
Mirta leaned her head back against the bulkhead, arms folded. There were a dozen troops in the Trakad assault vessel, Jaina and 11 Mandalorians in full armor, all waiting for the order from Admiral Dalla that might not actually come. The other 10 were members of Fett's elite special forces, the Ori Ramakade, super commandos, the troops who'd saved Kalula Station and her parents from the Yuuzhan Vong. It was a very tangled social web. It was also sobering to tally the net score of incidents and realize that the Solos had done more lasting harm to Fett than Fett had to them.
"Alit Orishya Taldin,"
Mirta muttered.
"What's that mean?" "Family is more than bloodline, meaning that families are about who raises and cares for you, not who your birth parents are. Or, put another way, your real relatives can treat you worse than Chakarish strangers."
Jaina could work out the meaning. She wasn't picking up much of the language, though. Every Mandalorian seemed to be at least trilingual—Basic, Mandoa, and Huttese. and they spent a lot of time with their helmets on, talking among themselves. Whatever language the 10 commandos were using on their helmet comlinks, Jaina was only aware of the body language, hand gestures, and head movements. It was an animated discussion, conducted in apparent silence. The effect was unnerving, as if they had senses that she didn't, and she was missing the bigger picture. She wondered if they were gossiping about her. They radiated amusement.
Aha!
It was always edifying to see your own characteristics reflected in others. The next time that some ordinary being treated her with suspicion, she'd think how her force abilities looked from the outside. Myrta turned her head and said something to the commandos. A stream of unintelligible words emerged from the helmets, followed by laughter.
"It's all they can think about," Myrta muttered. "I'm glad it's only once every 5 years."
"What is?"
"Galactic Bolo Ball Tournament. It's taken over the Holonet."
"Wrong again, then. Jaina's misfortunes weren't as riveting as a sporting event. Life didn't center on her small circle. Another reminder that there was a wider world she seldom saw."
"Where's Fett?"
"Slave One. Where else?"
The small Mandalorian flotilla included Fett's ship, the tank-like Trakhad, and a squadron of gladiators and aggressors. The holochart set in the bulkhead showed other vessels idling at the RV point, a carrier, judging by the hatches, and a sentinel landing craft that looked heavily modified. The carrier was tiny, no more than 100 meters long.
"Bevine?"
Jaina felt almost protective toward him. He seemed to pick up Fett's pieces far too often.
"Didn't see him embark."
"Babuir told him to stay behind, either to placate Medrit or to keep an eye on Babuir."
Myrta did a quick little shake of her head.
"I mean, Grandmama, it's the same word in Mandoa. I mean, Sintas."
At least Bevine wasn't going to get himself killed following Fett's whim. Jaina always had a stake in her missions, so it was hard to imagine how soldiers would take risks like this for credits or out of some loyalty to a man who simply hired them out. She stopped short of judging them, though. She'd seen the state of Mandalore, and she'd never had to worry about where the next meal was coming from.
"How did you manage to hate a man you'd never met, Myrta?"
Jaina could sense the emotions between Myrta and her grandfather pretty clearly. Myrta longed to love him, but seemed battered by constant disappointments, and Fett was trying hard to get it right, bemused by failure.
"Did your mother even remember him? You didn't even know Sintas."
"I grew up hearing how Fett had abandoned Grandmama and Mama, and that she wouldn't have been struggling to pay the bills or having to take dangerous bounties if he'd taken some responsibility."
"Yes, but to hunt him down to kill him? For years? Most folks get a lawyer."
"Mama had a bad time as a kid, moving from place to place, always getting in fights because she was different."
Myrta shrugged, but didn't elaborate.
"She even married a Mandalorian to improve her chances of finding Babuir. My father."
"Wow," said Jaina.
That was dedicated hatred. She didn't ask why Myrta had followed her father's culture, or why she hadn't worked out earlier that Aelin was a little obsessive.
"I'm sorry."
"And Babuir wasn't what I grew up expecting. Some womanizing thug blowing his fortune in cantinas. He was just this wasted, austere, lonely man. Hard to even like. And yet I found I was proud of him."
Myrta let out a long breath and reached for her helmet. It was a cue that she'd had enough of bearing her soul. Jaina counted it as a plus that she'd even bothered to talk, let alone in those frank terms.
"I still love my brother, but there's nothing left to like about him," Jaina said. "Love's a very separate thing. It has an independent life of its own."
"Well, if you have to earn love on points, It's not love, is it? It's approval.
Jaina peeled a chunk of ujjalai stuck to her finger and decided the syrup would make great gasket sealant. One of the commandos, the tattooed man called Carid, took off his helmet and cocked his head on one side in an aw-come-on gesture.
Hey, plan the celebration you'll have after your marriage. What's the point of surviving a mission if you're going to be this depressed?
That was Mondo sympathy.
It's a fet thing, Myrta said.
I bet Orade will teach you how to laugh. You'll get the hang of it.
Myrta seemed to manage a twitch of a smile at the mention of her betrothed. The minutes ticked away. Jaina had the sense of being in the engine room of an ancient seagoing ship, surrounded by pipes and hydraulic systems, rather than drifting imperceptibly in space. A scraping sound made her look up at the deckhead.
Buchese, said Carid.
Myrta sealed her helmet, and he looked past her at Jaina.
Put your breather on, Jedi. That's someone docking up top. Just in case the seals don't hold.
Fix them with this,
Jaina said, holding up her last wrapped chunk of ujjalai. Everyone laughed, and she heard them this time.
I'm always happy to be test aircrew in a totally unproven vessel.
It'll hold, said Roms Aramar. Time was when Mondo Ade rode war droids into deep space. No fancy hulls. Raw vacuum that far from your shebs.
He indicated a tiny gap between gloved thumb and forefinger.
That's how we won an empire. You going soft or something, Carica? Oh, I know. We were tough then. We'd go 2 weeks without breathing. And half a dead pygmy Borat was enough to feed a whole clan for a week.
Carid folded his arms across his barrel of a chest and stretched out his legs.
If any of our babies couldn't lift a Beskad by the time they were weaned, we'd harden them up by catching them a full-grown Trandoshan and making them kill it with their pacifier and eat it raw. Ah, those were the days.
He belched.
Pardon me. We're just too cultured and sensitive now, you know?
Jaina bit her lip to stifle a laugh. One of the overhead hatches opened, and Fett slid down the ladder to land among them.
Docks with Slave One just fine, he said,
hooking his thumb in his belt. They really were testing the Trakad on the job. It didn't seem to faze any of them.
We got mission details now.
It's a go, then?
Jaina asked.
No, but we know what we have to do when we get the signal.
Fett passed around data chips.
Latest floor plans and layouts here. We'll either be taking out power grids to disable cannon batteries on the orbital yards as needed, or falling back to Pelion's flagship Bloodfin to defend it if he gets in trouble.
Pelion? Even in a little toy turbulent?
It was a woman under the helmet then. That must have been Isco Talgal. Bevine spoke of her in hushed tones.
What's going to put a dent in that?
Dala's keen that someone should look out for him personally.
Does she know something we don't?
Dala has a contingency plan for everything. Somewhere she's briefing someone to take out the Mondos if we don't behave. That's why she's so hard to kill.
Fett smelled faintly of jetpack fuel and antiseptic. Smells were more noticeable in the cramped compartment.
My personal orders. If you run into Jason Solo, you leave him. Unless you really need to kill him. No hunting, no trophies, no avenging the Mandalore. He's Jaina's when she's good and ready. Or else me and Bevine have wasted valuable time on her.
Got it, Mandalore,
Carid said. Jaina wasn't sure if it was a Mandalorian courtesy, or just that Fett wanted her to share some misery by way of general payback. She let it pass.
What do you want me to do? You all seem to know what your roles are.
You're the ace pilot, Jedi.
Fett jerked his head in the direction of the aft bulkhead, as if there was something behind them.
Spare Besuleek in the carrier. Up for it?
Jaina felt a pang of excitement, and then instantly guilty. It seemed wrong to find any small pleasure in life so soon after Mara's death. She'd been the same after her brother Anakin was killed, as if feeling anything other than permanent grief was somehow betraying him.
I'd hate to think anyone I left behind couldn't fully live again. I have to get past this.
She thought of Mara having a good laugh about Jaina edging past 5-year-olds with blasters, and seized the chance.
Can I at least get a look at the controls first?
She asked.
It's hard learning on the job in combat.
We can test cross-decking to the carrier at the same time.
Fett wasn't joking. The Trokhod pilot brought the vessel down on the deck of the carrier and settled it flush against a hatch. The Trokhod's belly hatch opened. Jaina, feeling like a bug tipped out of a box, jumped down to the deck 5 meters below, easing her landing with the force. 4 dark gray wedge-shaped fighters sat on the hangar deck, a tight fit, and the familiar scent of hot drive, lube oil, and coolant was reassuring. She stood admiring their lines. It was a pilot's machine, all right. Fett climbed down rungs set in the bulkhead, boots clanging as the spikes in the toe caps caught the metal.
Myrta.
Fett never raised his voice, not even when he called out to someone.
You too.
Leave her to me, Babuir.
Myrta walked up to a Besuleek and pressed something on her forearm plate to open the canopy.
Have we got time to get aloft for a few minutes?
Knock yourself out,
Fett said, and climbed back up the rungs to vanish into the belly of the Trokhod.
Two-seater,
Myrta said.
Up you get. You're driving.
You're qualified on these?
If you mean can I fly one? Yes.
Myrta was remarkably agile, even in armor, and was up on the airframe and lowering herself into the co-pilot seat before Jaina had a chance to worry.
Only qualification is not killing yourself. We're not great form-fillers in Keldabe.
The canopy clicked into closed position, and the cockpit was suddenly muffled against the sounds outside. Myrta, wedged right behind Jaina's seat, pointed out the drive ignition button.
Push it.
Jaina pressed the button carefully with a cautious fingertip. The Besuleek made a little ack, like a living animal's cough, and then the airframe shivered as the initial throaty rumble of the drive rose in pitch to a steady, singing, pure note.
"If you're nervous, Jaina," Myrta said, "remember I'm the one putting all my faith in you."
"Yeah, no pressure."
Jaina followed the hand signals of a Mandalorian in bronze armor to roll back and moved the yoke intuitively, surprised when the fighter responded as she expected. The hangar deck turbo lift lifted. She watched the cross-sections of decks pass the cockpit as they rose and heard airtight hatches hiss and snap closed beneath them. Eventually, she was looking up at star-dappled space. She was ready to take off.
"Nothing to crash into,"
Myrta said. Her arm snaked past Jaina's cheek and pointed at the various instruments.
"Almost X-wing panel layout, except the weapon systems are this side. Take her out, Jaina."
"I'm a Jedi. I can fly anything." "Full domestic spec?"
Jaina asked.
"Export, and that still beats what you fly at home."
Jaina let vague familiarity take over her hands, and her force ability to sense position and every little nuance of the Besuleek's handling did the rest. She was clear of the small flotilla before she realized it, and getting a sense of how tight the turns could be. It felt wonderful. It was like any well-designed, lovingly crafted tool. It felt like an extension of her body, not a platform designed around the weapons with grudging space left for the being who had to deliver them.
"Easy to be seduced by it, isn't it?"
Myrta said. She meant the Besulik, that was clear, but Jaina thought of the ease with which she slid toward darkness and how easy it was starting to feel among these people, how natural to be learning to treat her brother like a bounty. She wondered where the line lay between being open to new ideas and too easily betraying the old.
"It's perfect," Jaina said.
Myrta wasn't as hard to read in the Force as her grandfather. The sense of agitation hung in the cockpit.
"You think a Jedi healer would really be able to help my grandmother?"
Jaina thought of Gotab, and why he'd found Mandalore as irresistible as this fighter was to her. She knew he wouldn't welcome her poking around in his business.
"Can't do any harm. I'll find one."
"Thanks, Jaina."
She realized she'd ceased to be just Jedi, and even Solo, and was now Jaina. For some reason, that heartened her even more than not being shot on sight as a spy.